Now it came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Yahweh, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Serah, which is in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash. Israel served Yahweh all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of Yahweh which he had done for Israel. The bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel had brought up out of Egypt, buried at Shechem in the plot of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and which had become an inheritance of the children of Joseph. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died. They buried him in a hill belonging to Phinehas, his son, which was given to him in the mountains of Ephraim. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated. Tonight we come to the conclusion of our series through the book of Joshua. After accounts of conquest, the division of the land, Joshua's farewell address to Israel, and a ceremony of covenant renewal, the book of Joshua ends with a narrative of three burials. That may seem a bit anticlimactic, but this passage provides appropriate closure to the book with a reminder of some of its key themes. We're going to work our way through it, looking at each burial in turn. First, the burial of Joshua in verses 30 through 31, then the burial of the bones of Joseph in verse 32, and then the burial of Eleazar in verse 33. We begin with the burial of Joshua. To set the context for this account, recall that chapter 23 recorded Joshua's farewell address to Israel, and chapter 24 recorded the ceremony of covenant renewal at Shechem. And at the conclusion of that ceremony, we read in verse 28, "So Joshua let the people depart, each to his own inheritance." And that brings us to verse 29. Now it came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Yahweh, died, being 110 years old. With this verse, the narrative of Joshua has come full circle. The ending echoes the beginning. Recall the very first verse of the book. After the death of Moses, the servant of Yahweh, it came to pass that Yahweh spoke to Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' assistant. The book began by mentioning the death of Moses, the servant of Yahweh. And the question raised in chapter 1 was whether Joshua would be a worthy successor to the great Moses. Could he fill the leadership sandals of the great lawgiver? We've noted a number of places throughout the book that point to an affirmative answer to that question, as Joshua again and again has been faithful. And Joshua 24:29 puts an exclamation point on that affirmation, though it does so in a subtle way. We saw that Moses was identified as the servant of Yahweh in the book's very first verse. Now that epithet is used of Moses 14 times throughout the first 23 chapters. But in those first 23 chapters, it is never applied to Joshua. It is only in his death that we read of Joshua, the servant of Yahweh. And with that little phrase, Joshua is extolled as a faithful leader of Israel like Moses before him. Nothing greater could have been chiseled on Joshua's tombstone than those words, the servant of Yahweh. We're told that Joshua was 110 years old when he died. That is the same age at which Joseph died, and one commentator noted that the Egyptians viewed 110 years as an ideal lifespan. Joshua lived a life, a full life of divine blessing. Verse 30, "And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Serah, which is in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash." Earlier in the book, we learned that Joshua received his inheritance after all the land had been divided up and distributed. We read in Joshua 19, verses 49 and 50, when they had made an end of dividing the land as an inheritance according to their borders, the children of Israel gave an inheritance among them to Joshua the son of Nun. According to the word of Yahweh, they gave him the city which he asked for, Timnath-Serah, in the mountains of Ephraim, and he built the city and dwelt in it. Now it is significant that chapter 24 tells us they buried Joshua within the border of his inheritance. Yahweh has been faithful to his promises. Joshua received his promised possession in the land of Canaan, and that is where his body is entombed. And verse 31 then provides a coda to Joshua's burial. Israel served Yahweh all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of Yahweh, which he had done for Israel. And this verse serves as a fitting epitaph for Joshua. Those whom Joshua led followed in his faithful footsteps, not only during his life, but then during the lifetimes of the elders who outlived him. And we're told that these had known all the works of Yahweh, which he had done for Israel. And that word known, that they had known these things, that's that very strong Hebrew word, yada. It refers to intimate, personal knowledge in relationship. You see, these elders not only knew about what the Lord had done, they had experienced it personally. They had experienced it as his covenant faithfulness in their very lives. And this experience provided a great anchor for their faithfulness. But while verse 31 provides a positive ending to the story of Joshua, it has a foreboding element as well. Israel's faithfulness extended through the lifetimes of the elders who outlived Joshua. But what then? And the next book in the Bible, Judges, will show that Israel did not persevere in that kind of faithfulness. I want you to listen to Judges chapter 2, verses 7 through 10. Listen for how it repeats what is said in Joshua 24, but then also adds to it. Joshua 2, starting at verse 7. So the people served Yahweh all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of Yahweh which he had done for Israel. Now Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of Yahweh, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnath-Heretz in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash. When all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know Yahweh nor the work which he had done for Israel. While we celebrate the lives of faithful men like Joshua, we should always remember that the church is ever potentially one generation away from apostasy. Any financial advisor worth his salt will tell you that past returns are no guarantees of future performance. And the same principle applies in the spiritual realm. Each generation must embrace their faithful heritage in acts of personal faith and obedience to the Lord. We should never presume upon the past. And certainly the transition from Joshua to Judges gives such a warning. Well, that brings us to the burial of the bones of Joseph. The last verses of the book of Genesis record Joshua's request that his bones ultimately be taken out of the land of Egypt and buried in the land of promise. We read in Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25, the very last verses of that book. Well, I'll read 26 to get to the end. And Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Now that instruction from Joseph, when he knows he's going to die soon, that his bones ultimately be carried into the land of promise, that instruction was a strong statement of faith on his part, wasn't it? He was absolutely certain the Lord would be faithful to the promise of giving Israel the land of Canaan. And the book of Joshua narrates the conclusion of that journey for Israel, and now also the journey of Joseph's bones. Verse 32. The bones of Joseph, which the children of Israel had brought up out of Egypt, they buried at Shechem, in the plot of ground which Jacob had bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of silver, and which had become an inheritance of the children of Joseph. This verse mentions that Jacob bought a plot of ground at Shechem. Genesis 33 records this purchase and tells us in 33:20, then Jacob erected an altar there and called it El Elohe Israel, which translates God, the God of Israel. And this follows a pattern of Abraham, for the very first altar that Abraham erected anywhere was at Shechem. We read that in Genesis chapter 12, that first chapter that deals with God's call of Abram and those first covenant promises announced to him. So Abraham built an altar at Shechem. Jacob builds an altar at Shechem. And now this is where Joseph's bones are buried. We see then the burial of his bones at Shechem illuminating both the faith of Israel, stretching from Abraham to Jacob to Joseph to Joshua, as well as the faithfulness of God in granting the land of Canaan to Israel. While Jacob in faith had purchased one small plot in the midst of Canaanite territory, that plot is now part and parcel of the whole land which is Israel's possession. God, the God of Israel, has been faithful. And thirdly, we read of the burial of Eleazar. Moses' brother Aaron had been Israel's first high priest. Upon his death in the wilderness, that position passed to his son Eleazar. That's recorded in Genesis chapter 20. The book of Joshua has shown Eleazar to be a key leader alongside Joshua. He's mentioned a number of times in the allocation of the land. Eleazar is there with Joshua as they make that distribution. Chapter 14, chapter 17, chapter 19, chapter 21, all of these places mention Eleazar alongside Joshua. Now we read of his death and burial, verse 33. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, died. They buried him in a hill belonging to Phinehas his son, which was given to him in the mountains of Ephraim. And we need say little about this other than to note that Eleazar too is buried in land that is part of his family's inheritance. The account of these three burials demonstrates the faithfulness of Yahweh in granting Israel her promised inheritance. So the book of Joshua ends as it began, with a transition of leadership from one generation to another. And I imagine the people of Israel sometimes looked back upon the generation of the conquest under Joshua the way we look back on the generation that fought World War II. We call it the greatest generation. And it surely would have been wonderful to know all the works of Yahweh as that generation did. But the burials of Joshua and Eleazar remind us that every generation passes from the scene. And the subsequent book of Judges warns us not to presume upon the past or to put our faith in men. Over and over, that will lead to disappointment. Our hope is to be found only in Yahweh, our God who showed his covenant faithfulness to Israel over and over again in this book of Joshua. And I think a fitting epitaph for this final chapter may be found in the last two verses of Isaac Watts's hymn based on Psalm 90, which we will sing at the end of our service today. Time, like an ever-rolling stream, bears all its sons away. They fly, forgotten as a dream, dies at the opening day. Our God, our help in ages past, our hope for years to come. O be our guard while troubles last, and our eternal home.